Rewind the dynamite from the post wrestling site. AEW, lighting up the fuse. Sit back and enjoy the bubbly. As we hear from John and Waitin. Where we're going, we don't need roads. And if the buck stops here, this thing might blow. Everything you hear, opinions of the show. And if you don't like it, go to the forums and let them know.
Hello, everybody. It is John Pollock and Wei Ting. Welcome to Rewind to Dynamite, your Wednesday night delight. Hello, Wei.
Ah, is that the unofficial subtitle of this show?
No, it is not.
Yeah, I hope not.
What do you mean you hope not? It wasn't that horrible, was it?
I mean, it's just not one I would be happy to repeat multiple times, I guess, or at all.
How's life?
Overall, good. Yeah, very good, I would say. I'm enjoying my life.
That's good. It's going okay?
Yeah.
You're ready for the next half of it, hopefully?
Yes, I would say so. What about you? Are you enjoying your life?
Well, it's going well. It's going good.
Well, what about it in particular? Is going so well?
There's a great variety of coffee shops in my general vicinity, all walking distance.
Ooh.
Like it's just crazy. And not just as much as like all these other stores are closing down, man, are Tim Hortons just like, just two have just opened up within 10 minutes, like walking distance of me. Like, honestly, I can walk 10 minutes in any direction and hit one. It's like we could have some variety. That would be fine. I would, you know, I kind of feel the need to maybe support kind of the local establishments more. Mm. So I think the dynasty is doing just fine here in Canada and beyond.
They're really filling all the empty spaces in the city. I mean, really, it's Tim Hortons, it's cannabis shops, and that's really it. That's all Toronto is going to be pretty much, you know, over the next 20 years. So it could be worse. Could be worse, you know. So but you're like, are you adventurous when you're going to these various coffee shops, or are you just kind of going for, you know, give me your drip, standard drip, house blend?
I'm a big house blend type of individual. I don't like to veer off too far. I mean, I'm not looking to change my life. I'm looking for attach this to my veins and just put it in. I'm not looking for an adventure. I'm looking for a hit.
But okay. Well, like, I mean, have you had maybe a latte?
I will go for the odd cappuccino every now and then.
Okay.
That's kind of my splurge drink, I guess. Like, right. Maybe once a month I'll get a cappuccino. Very nice. Nothing wrong with a cappuccino.
Right. But not something you're willing to go for on a regular basis.
No. It's very rich cappuccino. I like, honestly, like I can just drink black coffee.
I'm milk.
I like milk. I don't love milk, but it's
how about an espresso? Like just a straight up espresso shot. You ever do that?
It just feels kind of underwhelming for
you. Like the little longer.
Exactly. I want to have something that is going to be like, I'm not looking for, you know,
you need volume.
That's it. I mean,
yeah,
like
understandable.
Who wants to get hooked on cocaine? I mean, it's so little of it to really give you that rush. You know what I mean? You want to have a meal.
I gotcha. Yeah. No, it makes perfect sense. I'd love to hear your recommendations.
Sure. Maybe I will start
a podcast.
I notice like anything in my life, you are just like the wheels turn of like, you should like produce work for this.
I'm speaking as a friend. You're bringing up a topic that you seem to be interested in, and I'm trying to carry on the conversation. I'm not asking you to do more work. I'm not asking you to give me a Pollock's News update about your favorite coffee shops in the city. I'm not asking for ratings for these, you know, attendance figures of the local coffee shops in the neighborhood.
I could do a head count.
Turnstile count for your local Tim Hortons.
Some of these schools get out at lunch. and you get in the swarm, dude, they're going like 40, 50 deep in some of these Tim Hortons. Like, okay. I don't know how they fit so many people in there.
Well, that's why you get one within every 10 minutes.
Yeah. I do not understand the, like, I was not a, coffee meant nothing to me in high school. Didn't even in university, but times have changed.
You get older, but, you know, I would say, like, it feels like the scene has really gotten bigger in the city. At least it seems that way to me. Like, growing up, I don't think we had all these, you know, coffee shops everywhere.
There's a variety, too, because when I, at least, like, anecdotally, when I'm seeing, like, especially, like, high school kids that are populating, they're going for, like, the, like, non-coffee drinks.
Oh, yeah. Like, you go to, like,
drinking, like, just actual coffee. I don't know how in vogue that is.
Stand in line at a Starbucks, and it's, like, these people making, like, these teenagers making, like, $13 orders for, like, you know, all the Frappuccino, like, bullshit things. And I'm amazed that people have that much money to spend on just a drink these days.
Like, we're buying milkshakes. Let's just, like, that's what this is.
You're buying sugar and water and maybe some froth on top.
It's, you know,
delicious, though.
The meal of champions. All right. That's two old guys talking about high school kids. So there you have our latest update there. Anything else you're looking forward to this weekend, this week? This month?
Is there a wrestling event this weekend?
Not really, no.
Then I'm looking forward to
Will Ospreay and Michael Oku.
Yeah, sure. I'm looking forward to it. Their last match was great. I guess you know, is it like my main event of the weekend? I'm gonna admit it's not. But I will make time for that. That sounds like a great match.
Okay. That's coming up this weekend. Coming up this week. Ask away, the mailbag show. This is what Way is looking forward to the most. We have 2 months worth of questions that we are going to be getting to on Thursday. So postwrestlingcafe.com is where you can go get all of the answers to your questions. God knows what you were asking a month and a half ago, but we will answer them all. These are always fun shows where you guys get to direct where we go, what we talk about. No subjects are off limits. So you can still send your questions in by by Thursday morning, get them in at forum.postwrestling.com. There's an Ask Away thread there that you can just add to. Or if you want your voice to be heard, memo.fm/postwrestling is where you can go. Submit your question and it will get onto the show. And then the whole world will know what you sound like.
Yeah, sure. If you care to maybe, if you don't want that, if you want to use a AI generated voice to ask your question, I suppose you're welcome to do that as well. If you want to get a substitute, you know, like ask a friend to impersonate you because you don't want your voice on the radio, that's cool too.
The Black Scorpion voice, you can do that too.
Be creative with it. Yeah.
So that is coming up on Thursday. Friday, we've got Rewind to SmackDown. And then this weekend, we do not have Collision Course because Collision has the night off. But in its place, we will have an edition of Postmarks with David and Bruce chatting with Robert Pearson, the man of mystery, the man that is our version of the Dos Equis guy. It is Robert Pearson, the most interesting man in the world.
I would say so. Yeah. He's somebody that we've known for a long, long time. Somebody who has certainly helped the growth of post wrestling in a big way. So I look forward to an extended conversation between those two and Robert.
And then Sunday, it's the UFC 298 post show with myself and Eric Marcotte. And then Sunday night, the NWA podcast live here on this channel. You don't want to miss that show. So you know what you
can do? That's my main event. That is what I'm waiting all week for.
The whole schedule is built around the NWA podcast. So subscribe to the channel, turn on those notifications, and get ready for Nate, Chris, and Andrew, as they have a lot to tackle this month on the podcast. So check that out on Sunday.
Yeah.
Any predictions?
For
their show.
Oh, like length of show? Is that what we're talking about again?
No, we already talked about that.
The content of the show?
Yeah. Give me a rundown.
I'm assuming they will talk about The Rock. I'm assuming they will talk about Roman Reigns. Maybe even Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins in there as well. I'm sure they'll talk about Vince McMahon. At least
you think?
That's part of the assumption. And who knows what else? You know, it's wide open from that.
I think we'll get some Super Bowl talk.
Possibly. Yeah, possibly.
Okay, that's coming up on Sunday. Let's get into the news. We're going to start off with a story coming out from Lee Cole. And this is more so something that could be very, very newsworthy. Lee Cole, for those that are unfamiliar, he is the older brother of Tom Cole, who was at the center of the Ring Boy scandal. And I mean, was somebody that, you know, we've talked extensively about, took his life a number of years ago. And Lee Cole has been doing a lot of videos about it since the Vince McMahon scandal. But even before that, he's been going through, you know, his dealings with the company and, you know, what led to, you know, his brother taking his life. This was an extremely traumatic series of events that he went through. And Tom Cole, you know, he had exchanged text messages with his brother, like right before he took his life, and has been sharing those text messages. It's some really heart-wrenching stuff. And Lee Cole has stated that a former ring boy who worked at the WWF between 1986 and 1988 is going to be speaking with him for the first time ever publicly. He has not disclosed the name yet, nor when this interview is going to be released. But if this interview does come out, it will be another on the record allegation of a ring boy. And we, of course, Tom Cole was someone who came forward when the story first broke in March of 1992 in the Jeff Savage piece in the San Diego Union Tribune. There was another ring boy by the name of Chris Lose that also put his name out there. And then he sort of drifted away from the story, but was there at the beginning. This would be, if my memory is correct, this would be the third ring boy to have an on the record account of things. So that's something that we talked about last week, is the idea, if this current set of scandals that the company is going through, will it embolden anyone to come forward? I don't know what the thinking is of this particular individual, what has spurred them on, but regardless, like, this is something I think a lot of people will pay attention to. And again, I don't think that this whole scandal from the early 90s should be forgotten about either. Like, there is, when we are dissecting the culture of the company, it is like, so much of it to me is linked to this period and what was, you know, just a horrendous part of the company's history that a lot of companies would not have survived, and WWF did, and they thrived after this as well. Like, this was not something that crippled this company, but something to certainly keep your eyes on. If you go to my Twitter account, I did attach the link to the YouTube channel that Lee Cole runs, and you can also see some of his other videos where he goes through a lot of his documentation and his own experiences with the company, as he was the one that, when the scandal, like some of the accusations first kind of came to light, it was Tom Cole that informed his brother of what happened to him. And it was Lee Cole that reached out to Phil Mushnick, who is the columnist at the New York Post. And Phil Mushnick was one of the voices that was, you know, prominent at that time period when it comes to the whole Titangate scandal. So it's certainly something of great interest if this interview is in fact released. But again, they have not stated when it will be released. Just they've kind of put out the teaser that it's coming.
And it's Lee Cole's YouTube channel.
Lee Cole's YouTube channel. Yes. I think it's called like Wrestling with the Devil. I think it is what it's called, but it's linked on my Twitter. If you want to just scroll down and you can go to the channel directly there. Next up, Shotzi suffered a knee injury at the NXT tapings on Tuesday night. This was first reported by Fightful, and WWE has since confirmed this with some changes to SmackDown on Friday. But if you watched NXT on Tuesday, you saw Shotzi on the broadcast, and they were taping next week's episode right after. So Shotzi was there to do the match with Lyra Valkyria and suffered this knee injury during the match. And it was just described as a freak accident that occurred. And it sounds like they just had to think on their feet because they had to fill the episode for next week. So they did this impromptu match with Lyra facing Lash Legend. We'll be very curious to see how they edit this next week, because they set up the angle where the match is going to happen. Like, do they air it sort of as is and just go with, like, she suffered a knee injury and we get an impromptu opponent? But Nick Aldis did drop a video during Dynamite
announcing that Shotzi will not obviously be part of the qualifying matches, as she was set to take on Tiffany Stratton. So now it's Tiffany Stratton against Zelina Vega, and Naomi will be taking on Elba Fire in the women's qualifiers in Salt Lake City on Friday. But wishing the best to Shotzi. It's, you know, there's been a rash of injuries. It's obviously the something that you hope is not too serious of an injury, but with a knee, it obviously could be a serious one.
Yeah, and especially for somebody like her, who I would say has kind of been flirting with, you know, an ascension from relative obscurity in the sort of low to mid card of the women's division in the WWE to somebody who occasionally might pair up with Bianca Belair and might actually, you know, be in an actual substantive storyline. It's a big setback for her, and it absolutely sucks. I'm very curious to see how they play it out, because from the sounds of Fightful's report, it sounds like it was kind of done live to tape and they were almost rushing to, you know, put this match together in real time.
Yeah.
I personally, if it fits within the allotted time, I would opt for that, you know, tell the truth of what happened here. It's maybe a bit interesting to think like that Lash Legend would have been, you know, somebody that they would have picked for that spot of an impromptu match. From Fightful's reporting, it sounds like a lot of people were impressed, not just by her, but obviously by Lyra Valkyria for being able to put whatever they were able to put together on the fly. So I hope we kind of get to see, you know, a relatively unedited version of all that.
Let's talk first just about Elimination Chamber. They've added a Grayson Waller effect segment for the premium live event. So Grayson Waller will be hosting his segment with Cody Rhodes and Seth Rollins. So they're sending both of them to the event. And this came right after we saw the quarter hours, where these two spiked the number on Monday. Like, their segment did phenomenal. So this, for some people, might be the main event of Elimination Chamber. And I guess we'll see after tomorrow night if they kind of have locked in the involvement for these two, and if, in fact, they're going with the tag match, however they're setting things up. But that's been added to the show. So as of now, we've got four matches, with the two chamber matches, Rhea Ripley against Nia Jax and the Judgment Day against Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate, with the Grayson Waller effect. I don't know if you need much more than that, unless they are going to do some story to get Bronson Reed on this show, but certainly doesn't need it when you figure these chamber matches are each going to be 25, 30 minutes each. And this has sort of been like, this is maybe one more match, but probably the Grayson Waller effect will be some significant talking segment that they have on top of this.
That will be the length of a match, you know, that Waller effect segment itself. Yeah, you're right. You know, with the two chamber matches, I mean, it seems to kind of fit the current trend of, you know, these PLEs not really having that much bloat these days. I'm sure if you're attending the show, you might be disappointed that you're not going to see either Cody or Seth in an actual match. But I'm sure the talking segment will be, you know, important, I hope. And it's something for Grayson Waller in Australia, which is going to be awesome for that guy's career. Does this mean that neither Roman nor The Rock will be there?
I think that's a pretty safe assumption.
I think so too. I don't think this tag match is happening there for the two or three people that still think that might be a possibility.
No, I don't see that one happening. But there you go. That's Elimination Chamber. Rocky Romero and QT Marshall have been hired by AEW. In the case of QT, he is returning, according to Fightful. And then Dave Meltzer had a note about Rocky Romero. So Romero is still working with New Japan. He is still working, you know, with CMLL. He's holding a title in MLW, and he's going to take a front office position in AEW, while QT is coming back, just listed in an executive role. So it sounds like this will not be the return of QTV. We can only hope.
I mean, it says like he might not be wrestling, but I don't think it disqualifies him from bringing back QTV, because they were so popular.
It should. Yeah, they're back. You know, QT was sort of, you know, made his intentions pretty clear when he was leaving, and now he's back.
What was the report of what he said about the direction of AEW that he did not enjoy, that it was becoming too...
I don't want to paraphrase, but it was just that, you know, it was changing, essentially, that the things were changing.
Yeah.
The company was going in a different direction, something of that wording.
House of Wrestling has QT Marshall felt AEW was becoming too much like New Japan Pro Wrestling. Meanwhile, the other person attached to this headline is Rocky Romero that they brought in here. So, I mean, whatever, like who knows what exactly happened there. But Rocky Romero, let's talk about, you know, that this man is the Forbidden Door, is he not? Like he's kind of attached to everything, and I'm sure is responsible for a lot of these different connections of, you know, various wrestlers kind of using AEW almost as a bit of a you know, funnel for greater exposure for all of these other companies. And I as a fan, I think it's made AEW that much more dynamic. And
and we don't know what exactly the role is, but you would think it would sort of be this liaison between all these working partners that he's got the relationships with, that he's active with, that he is somebody. Again, it remains to be seen what the official title is and what his duties are.
It speak to the continued strength of the relationship between AEW and New Japan, or is this somebody just making their transition from New Japan to AEW?
I think it is probably a position that comes with a, not just a degree of responsibility, but is probably a very, you know, stable income that he's going to be making. And you would think that, you know, of the people out there, like Rocky Romero has certainly carved out a post wrestling career for himself where he wants to go. And of the different companies, I mean, AEW is a pretty stable spot for him that I would certainly wonder what he is looking for in terms of, you know, doing the odd couple of matches. He could do that forever. But I think this is probably just a signal that AEW, you would think, is going to be his home base, and whatever outside projects he has, I don't know if those would take priority or precedence over this AEW job that would seem to be his core position. That would be my guess. All right. Let's continue on. And outside of those news and notes, Bryan Danielson is going to get to go to Arena Mexico for his continued his wrestling summer camp. This time going down March 29th with the BCC. They will be part of Homenaje a Dos Leyendas, taking on Místico, Volador Jr., Ultimo Guerrero, and the man's idol, Blue Panther.
I'm gonna give you an A minus for that, John. I could tell you put some effort into that pronunciation. It sounded good to my ears, at least.
Well, I'll get a WhatsApp message if I misspoke. But yeah, this is sort of what things have been leading towards with the promos and such. And I think the atmosphere will be incredible for this match. And this is, I think, really going to just be another kind of bucket list item for Bryan Danielson. I mean, yeah. Blue Panther is another one, like a Yuji Nagata to him in terms of someone he holds in great high regard. Yes, I dug this up from way back when he was in WWE, when he got a signed Blue Panther mask sent to him, and he's just geeking out over this gift that he received from the man.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we're living vicariously through Bryan Danielson as a man who's kind of getting to live out his dreams of wrestling all around the world and wrestling all of these stars that he's, you know, wanted to face for a long, long time. But for, you know, because he was under the WWE's banner, they never were able to set up. So I'm really happy for him. I wonder how much they'll play it up in story of him, like, you know, wanting this Blue Panther.
They brought it up on the broadcast tonight of the fact he's going down there.
Can they play this video of him from the WWE social media getting this mask?
I'm going to guess probably unlikely, even though this was probably shot on his phone. But
he'll probably bring the mask with him, though, or at least
he might wear it. That would be actually pretty funny if he wore the mask. That was the story, that this guy was at one point like just growing his hair out with the idea of leaving WWE to go put his hair on the line against like Atlantis down in down in Mexico for like an anniversary card. I mean, I think this has been something he's wanted to do for a while. And all of these little like weird one-offs, I think that's going to be the post Danielson career. I mean, he's really backpedaled the idea that this is a hard retirement, that he's going to be doing matches, but they're going to be a lot more selective. And I think this is the kind of thing that we can expect him, like just randomly out of nowhere, he's going to do an Arena Mexico match with someone that he's got just an affinity for that wants to wrestle. And I think this is probably a preview of what he's going to be doing post retirement, just, you know, less matches.
Do you think it will be a setup for a singles match between Blue Panther and Danielson?
Well, he's got several months. Yeah, he could. I certainly think so.
Mm-hmm.
Or somebody else as well. I mean, they've got the relationship, and he's got a bunch of months of this countdown that they seem to be, you know, this could probably just be a kickoff and do more. How obscure are we going to get with this Danielson thing? Is he going to do a Defy show before August?
Why not? Who would he wrestle at Defy that he couldn't elsewhere, I guess?
Artemis Spencer. I don't know.
We don't know what the man dreams about.
It's the world is his oyster at this point, or a clam, whichever. AEW Collision ratings.
Vegetarian.
That's true. Collision ratings, they did a very good number on Saturday, 498,000 viewers and a 0.15 in the demo. So this was their best audience since October and highest demo number of the year. We go over to Raw on Monday night. It did 1,747,000 viewers and a 0.56. WrestleNomics reporting that the peak quarter came during the Cody Seth segment. Now, this quarter did have the benefit of no ad break, but regardless, this thing did a giant spike up to 2.13 million viewers and 934,000 in the demo for that crossover segment. They grew the audience 14% and grew the demo 18%. And to put this into contrast, this high point, if you compare it to the main event segment, those final 15 minutes of the show, the audience was down 30% from this peak with Cody and Seth. So, I mean, it is no question who the audience is. Like, Cody is the biggest, like, every, like, yes, you have The Rock that is kind of moonlighting here, but this is your biggest star. And you cannot deny that this Mania program is red hot, no matter what your complaints about some of the booking has been. Like, this was a big sign of just the general interest that these two have just for a 15-minute talking segment.
It's undeniable that this whole thing has made him a bigger star. You know, he was a big star even, you know, heading to it. And maybe we can ask the question, okay, if they just simply proceeded with the straightforward story of Cody winning the Rumble and then challenging Roman Reigns, would he have gotten to this level anyway? I'm going to say no. Whatever controversy occurred, whatever pivoting that they've done, it's all resulted in everything becoming that much bigger.
And NXT on Tuesday, I mean, they've pretty much just been flat with viewership. Like, it's zero movement from last week. It was 650,000 viewers, although they did have a 13% drop in the 18 to 49 demo, doing a 0.17. It was actually their lowest 18 to 49 number since August for Tuesday night show. And we will see what next week's tape show, what impact that has. So we'll get a taped NXT and a taped SmackDown next week as a comparison point. But there you go. That is all of your ratings information. And we are going to head into Dynamite.
Don't you have one more thing to suggest?
Oh, here? I do. Yes. We have put up the WrestleMania week schedule up on the site. A big thank you to John Cena for his assistance with calling all this information, all of these shows, all of these matches, and those that have also submitted information for shows as well. We appreciate all of those. I just wanted to quickly look, obviously not going through everything. You can do that yourself, postwrestling.com/mania. But some of the shows that stand out on the Thursday, it is Stardom's first show here in the U.S. since 2019, before the pandemic. They have not announced any matches for that, but I see that one having a lot of interest. That is going to be going on right around the same time as Bloodsport, which is part of the Collective. And then that evening is the Mark Hitchcock Memorial WrestleCon Super Show that Wei and I are going to be attending. And then DDT that night, Jeff Hardy in concert that Way's going to be going to. And then onto Friday, you've got Tokyo Joshi Pro, Progress, Wrestling Revolver, and House of Glory are doing a show. And then you've got Spring Break. And I was not aware of this other show that was going on, but Battleground Championship Wrestling is doing a tribute to the Extreme 2 at the former ECW Arena. And this is like pretty much like what you've like, it's a low key ECW reunion show, including the Dudleys against Atsushi Onita and a mystery partner. And I mean, you've got a bunch of names ECW's past. I mean, I was looking at this lineup and just given the location of where it is and who's on this, it's just interesting. This is going head to head with Spring Break, which is sold out. So Spring Break's already been a success. I can see with tickets not being available anymore for Spring Break, I can see a lot of interest for this ECW tribute show.
Well, you're in
Masato Tanaka and Rhino on this.
Yeah, I would say I don't know what my appetite is for ECW nostalgia in 2024 with this cast, but if I'm in Philadelphia and I'm looking for a reason to go to the ECW arena to see these guys, that interest is completely there. So
if you've never gone to an ECW show, I mean, this is kind of the closest you'll get to an experience here. Bill Alfonso is taking on Joel Gertner on this show. I mean, how could you miss this?
I mean, there's a sick sort of like curiosity to know what that looks like.
Is this a maybe for us?
Well, I guess it depends what else we'll be doing, whether or not we'll be doing like this is also probably going head to head with SmackDown and the Hall of Fame and also Final Battle or not Final Battle. What's the show?
Super. Well, they haven't officially announced it, but it is this would be where Supercard of Honor would be if it ends up being officially announced. And yeah, this is the same time as SmackDown and the Hall of Fame that night. And then into Saturday, you've got Stand and Deliver and WrestleMania. That is the back-to-back WWE stuff. And wait, you're going to go to a clusterfuck forever at midnight after WrestleMania while I'm at the press conference? Is that the plan?
Well, we shall see. Maybe we'll switch spots. I'll go to the press conference. You go to the clusterfuck.
Okay.
Ask a question at the clusterfuck, perhaps.
Okay, that's it. All right, we'll roll reverse and and you can be.
What does that say about me that you're the journalist who goes to the press conference and I'm the clusterfuck guy?
I just think like it's somewhat near and dear to your heart. The kind of battle royal.
Yes.
All right. We'll be talking about this as we draw closer. Final thing before we get to the Dynamite review. If you missed today's Pollock and Thurston, we had Tim Marchman on from Vice News. A really great discussion with Tim, who's been doing some outstanding reporting at Vice on the various investigations into WWE. And I mean, he was the one that was leading the charge on the whole Ashley Massaro story last week as well. So a really great discussion with him, not just on the principles involved, the different kind of aspects to each of the investigations, but also sort of taking us into like his reporting and some of the, you know, outreach he's seen with like various women that are out there and, you know, getting into like that mindset of, you know, that there are many people that, you know, do not want to put themselves through the like traumatic event of, you know, attaching themselves to something that has happened to them and what the response is when you suddenly become a public figure in these cases. So I thought it was a really great discussion that we had with Tim Marchman, if you want to check that out.
I think, you know, Tim Marchman certainly and reporters like you and Brandon continue to be at the forefront of these stories. And maybe in the mainstream news cycle, some of the new information has kind of died down. But it's great that I think every single week we're still getting these sort of discussions and updates from you guys.
Yeah, I mean, Brandon and I are pretty adamant like this is the biggest story going on right now. And you are like, believe me, like we're starting to see some of that of like pushback of like, why are you spending so much time on this? We're spending time on this because this is a story that has so much attached to it. And I feel there's constantly new things to look at, whether they are historical or current. And to me, this is of the utmost importance. And I think I speak for Brandon on that as well.
You speak for the audience that wants to know that stuff too.
All right. You can check that out on the site. And now we move on over to Dynamite from Cedar Park, Texas. Russell Tix reporting just over 3,000 tickets out for the show. And we're starting off with John Moxley and Dax Harwood. And Moxley is working over the leg of Dax, gets into a figure four, later an Indian deathlock, and then they're locked at the wrists, trading strikes, chops, slaps. They fight on the turnbuckle, and Dax hits a superplex, and then the two get on all fours and just clunk heads. Happy Valentine's Day. And they hit lariats. Dax gets the sharpshooter as Justin Roberts announces 5 minutes remain. And I thought this was like a nice touch because I think everyone, you're coming off the draw last week and they're kind of playing with the idea, oh, it's Justin Roberts giving us the signal because they're going to go the time limit here. And they end up not. They just teased it. There's a pile driver by Dax, but he can't go for the cover in time. It's delayed. So Moxley kicks out, and then it's Moxley with the cutter, stomp, and pile driver. Dax kicks out. He manages a brainbuster. Time is winding down. Moxley gets the shoulder up, and after Dax misses a swan dive off the top, a swan dive headbutt, Moxley locks on the rear naked choke. Dax is fighting it. He's fading away and finally taps at 18 minutes and 38 seconds, and Moxley will not let go of the hold. This was like a BJ Penn, Jens Pulver, and Cash then attacks and goes after him. Claudio runs in and hits a neutralizer to Cash, and as they've been building this program up, it will not be Revolution, but instead they're doing the tag next week.
Yes, they are. I mean, it could lead to something at Revolution, you know, whatever, a rematch or stipulation or something. But at least in the meantime, it is not. So this was, I think we just kind of look at the marquee and you'll know that it's a good match. I felt it was. I thought it had like a bit of a unique pace about it where there was a lot of standing striking, you know, between the two, and almost like had it sort of that element of each of them, like, you know, trying to one up each other with how much punishment they could each withstand. But this might be a popular opinion. I didn't think flirting with the time limit was a good thing for this match. Personally, I felt it went a little bit too long for a matchup that I think was just more of a introductory, you know, type of match for this feud. I mean, we're talking about the BCC that is kind of spent the majority of the month feuding with CMLL, and the FTR thing was just introduced, and it didn't have enough of my interest for me to pay attention for a tease of a 30-minute match.
20 minute. Mm. Well, I don't mind the inclusion of the like intervals of time being brought up. I think it's something you should be doing on a regular basis and not just reserved for when we're going to do a time limit draw. So it's fine to, I think, throw people off every now and then. I did feel like especially for a Texas crowd, like this was one where throughout the show, it was like, it's not like this crowd was going wild. And then it was like Willow came out. They were really hot for Willow Nightingale. And then that Texas death match, they got really heated. So to me, it was not a case of just, oh, is the crowd not mic'd? It was like they got very loud late in the program. But I would say for a lot of this, it was sort of just, you know, for some of the longer wrestling matches, it wasn't like the crowd, it was not like they were dead, but also not like amplifying things as I felt they really added, especially to the death match at the end. They wanted blood.
And Willow.
And Willow, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah.
Willow. Renee is with the Callis family, Hobbs and Takeshita, and they go over his win, submitting Jericho with the walls. No one wants to wrestle either of them, so Callis announced we're going to have to look from within, and he's going to put two family members together, and just this whimsical announcement, at the pay-per-view, it will be Konosuke Takeshita versus Will Ospreay. And Hobbs gets to watch. And Callis, talk about a label that people are going to hold this one to. Callis says this will be the match of the decade.
It's possible. I would say it's very possible. It's not so that
outlandish. Match of the year, it's underwhelming.
Yeah, sure. I mean, listen, if you could say that about maybe very few matches and not have like an uproar of, I don't know, people calling bullshit. Like, this is actually a match that actually has probably a very small chance, but still there is a chance that Takeshita versus Ospreay could be the match of the decade.
It's only got 4 years to really like to contend with. I mean, it's
yeah,
you know, it's not like they're announcing this in 2029. They're like, oh yeah. My God, we have to go all the way back.
But this is like the type of like, you know, like kind of quick matchmaking that I kind of love, especially for a pay-per-view. We're talking about Will Ospreay's true debut in AEW, and it's a matchup that feels fresh. It's a matchup that you almost know is going to be at least, you know, 4.5-star plus with Takeshita, who is also that level of competitor. It's a very attractive draw for a paying customer on a pay-per-view. And personally, it feels like it might set up a bit of a defection from Ospreay, from the Callis family, is what I would expect, because I think it's going to be really hard trying to get people to boo Will Ospreay at this point, you know, just coming off of his New Japan run.
Yeah. I mean, this pay-per-view is shaping up to be incredible from many fronts. And this addition, it's only going to bolster that.
Does this suggest that Ospreay won't appear on TV until the pay-per-view, since seeing that they already have a match announced for him, or do you expect him on TV?
I don't think he needs to. I think that's part of the appeal of just tune into the pay-per-view and you get his big entrance at the Greensboro Coliseum. Like they could bring him in for a promo.
They could show a video and just tee up the match.
You could have some highlights of New Japan footage of, yeah, like building him up. That's a good idea to have the vignettes, but save his appearance for the pay-per-view. I'm like, it's not going to make a big difference either way, but it's kind of just, it's announced and you're getting a red hot match for his first with like one of the better opponents you can throw at him for a debut match to just come in, and they'll probably get 20 minutes, you would think.
Match of the decade coming up.
Wardlow and Barrett Brown. This was not the match of the decade. It went a minute 23. Adam Cole was on commentary, but didn't speak. He hit the knee strike off the turnbuckle and powerbomb. 123. Wardlow wins. So I think this is the first time we've seen him wrestle since that knee injury tease, or that thought that he might have done damage to his knee. And he was wearing a brace here, but at least, you know, did a short match, but that's kind of par for the course with him.
It was his first match since the injury. Good to know that he's healthy enough that he could pull off a Wardlow squash match, which this was. Overall, maybe, you know, kind of forgettable in the body of the show, but significant because it was his first match back. I think it could have maybe used Cole cutting a promo afterwards just to kind of make the most of the situation. We are still talking about like the Undisputed Kingdom, that have become kind of forgettable.
What are they called again? The New World Order?
Yeah, I guess, you know, main event aside, which they did make a pretty significant appearance tonight.
The Young Bucks arrived in their private plane, still wearing their blood-stained suits. They would come out later. Adam Copeland against Daniel Garcia. As Justin Roberts introduces him, the rated R super, super, superstar. And Daniel Garcia, he's going for a surfboard, but instead does his dance while standing on the back of Copeland's knees, and then ends up just drilling the knees into the mat. Garcia starts selling his shoulder, which Copeland targets and would focus on. And then as we go to, I think this was during the picture-in-picture break, Copeland starts doing Daniel Garcia's dance to the crowd. And this crowd just turned on him. They were like, no, dude, that does not work. And Copeland just pretty much played heel the rest of this match. He goes to the floor. He takes this dude's sunglasses and breaks them. And the guy's got another pair of sunglasses. But man, this crowd, it was, I was curious like how they would play this, and this kind of felt like Copeland was just running with it. And I don't think you could have predicted that this would have been the response, but maybe the dance was the ace in the pocket to know a 50-year-old man doing this dance, that's going to be hated no matter what location we're in.
I guess it could be that. I think on the surface, you have two baby faces here, but you have a veteran going up against somebody who's up and coming. And I feel like that alone is enough to, you know, put the stakes up against Garcia to make him the underdog, obviously, in all of this. And also to it shows you how much the crowd loves Garcia.
Garcia went for the knee of Copeland with a dragon screw and then an inverted version of one. Copeland then continues to work on the shoulder. There's a superplex and Garcia comes down on the shoulder, and Copeland sets up for the spear and runs into a knee strike, and Garcia gets the jackknife cover. And man, this crowd was totally buying into Garcia upsetting Copeland, but he kicks out. Crossface is applied by Copeland when Nick Wayne and Killswitch run in for the very rare no contest ending between Copeland and Garcia. Christian and Shayna Wayne run down or walk down, and Cage grabs two chairs. Matt Menard yanks one away, but he's destroyed by Killswitch. So Killswitch choke slams Garcia. He's out, and Copeland tries to clear the ring with a chair when Cage is begging off in the corner, and Shayna low blows Adam from behind. He's hit with the Wayne's World, an extinction by Killswitch, and tons of heat here for Christian, who proceeds to hit Copeland with the one-man concerto.
Mm-hmm. Really good match, first of all, between Copeland and Garcia. I think he's, like, Copeland has been really good on this, you know, open challenge run. And I feel like he's definitely shown, not only is he keeping up with maybe the demanding AEW pace, like, he's more than keeping up with the AEW schedule of, you know, having, like, pretty substantial matches every single week here. I think he's been delivering really high quality, you know, throughout all of these matches. This one was interesting to see Copeland lead more into playing a heel role, inviting boos from the crowd. But it served to really kind of highlight Garcia as just a very, very beloved babyface at this point for an AEW crowd. So maybe it was a disappointing finish to some, but it didn't really bother me because, like, on TV, they have to set up
the
angle.
Was very good afterward. I mean, yes, the crowd very was hot. Very heated for that.
So question. Shouldn't this set up a three-way the way it did for Swerve and Page?
I thought the same thing, but for that very reason, this felt way too copycat. And for, like, coming out of this, I was wondering, are they going to go with Cage and Garcia with this injury angle to Copeland?
It's possible.
Like, that's a pretty serious angle to do if he's coming back in 3 weeks for the pay-per-view. But
isn't that flat though for Revolution? You know, you're
well, I think it's either that or it's the three-way, and they could do the three-way.
Yeah, I guess so. But I guess technically this was a DQ, right? Not a no contest, not a draw.
The commentary did call it a no contest, or they said the match has been thrown out. They did state that. So they could go the three-way direction. It would be odd not to have Adam Copeland involved here, but I took it like this should be like a concerto, should be something that is not just a week off, but
yeah. But good for Daniel Garcia. Didn't even have to get ranked and suddenly finds himself in title contention here.
That's how things work. They recap the 30-minute draw between Swerve and Hangman, and then they gave the update. Adam Copeland did walk to the back and he's being evaluated. So maybe it's not as dire as I'm projecting.
That seems to be what it will indicate. Yeah.
Walk off a concerto. Mm-hmm. Samoa Joe is out. He takes this was the ultimate heel line. He is taking credit for the rankings coming back. And he took a page out of the Texas playbook with this three-way. This match is now bigger and dumber. And says that these two might walk into this match, but they're going to be limping out of it. So Swerve comes down, says, "This wasn't supposed to be personal, but it's starting to with you running your mouth, Joe." And I guess a fan like yelled something here that none of us could hear, but man, they all laughed at this, and this held up Swerve. Like, even he had to pause here.
I heard, so Swerve was in the middle of saying, "You said," and then the fan yelled, "What did he say?" And I don't know if that was enough to elicit that sort of reaction or if there was something else that was said off mic, but that was all.
Howled at this. I couldn't imagine how many people heard this guy that laughed, but I mean, it was a very intimate venue. Swerve is going to become one of the greatest of all time. He said that nothing will change at Revolution except he will be the champion. And then Hangman is interrupting them. He comes out to booze, says, "I wasn't mad last week. In your Dynamite reports, don't write that I was angry."
Yeah. Make sure you note that, so you know.
Calls this horse shit. Says Swerve couldn't win in 30 minutes. Says, "I would prefer a one-on-one match with Samoa Joe, two people that value this title. And Swerve, after all we've been through, you don't deserve 1 second of my time, much less five more minutes. That's why I didn't give it to you last week." And says, "You couldn't get the job done. You don't deserve to be in this title match." Joe just says, "You two aren't going to pin one another to take my title. I'm Samoa Joe. I'm whipping both your asses." And Joe, again, just seemed like the dominant force in this segment. I thought this wasn't one of Swerve's better performances in terms of just talking. I thought Joe was like the star of this segment, but what this was leaning towards at the end was I thought Joe was going to invoke like this has to be elimination or something like that, and not like the cheap three-way where it's like the champion doesn't have to be pinned deal. Like that seemed to be what he was referencing based on this line at the end, but they didn't come out and make that clear.
I think he was just more saying neither of you are going to get a chance to pin each other because I'm going to destroy the both of you. I thought it was a strong segment. Honestly, I felt like all three's promos were pretty good here with good storytelling from everybody. It's a very interesting way that they're building up to this three-way because the feud here is between Swerve and Paige. But because Joe holds the championship that they both won, he doesn't necessarily get lost here. Again, a very unconventional way of building up to a three-way, but I would say it's been working so far. What's also interesting about it is just sort of like the sort of very unique heel babyface dynamics to each person involved in this feud. I mean, this certainly continued Paige's heel turn by, you know, having him come out and basically lying about actually being mad last week. He's constantly kind of focusing on Swerve's inability to win rather than his own inability to beat Swerve. So it's working very well. The crowd booed him very, very loudly tonight. Swerve, meanwhile, cuts pretty much an entirely babyface promo talking about his accomplishments that he has proven, like, justly to the audience that he's earned. You know, he talks about working harder than everybody. These are all babyface qualities that we love, and he's being cheered, you know, as a babyface. Joe, too, I think simply by being cool is also being cheered like a babyface. So you have two guys here in Swerve, who's a part of a heel stable, Joe, who just turned on MJF and joined with the Devils, both being cheered as babyfaces. And you have Paige, who is the guy who had his house broken into, and a guy who's about to team with Hook and RVD next week, being treated as the heel in all of this. So it's a very unique sort of like mix, but I think it's all working.
Well, even last week, I mean, if you had the role somewhat reversed, it would have, I think it would have flowed a little easier in that Swerve is the guy who was ranked number one. Like he's beaten Hangman, and it almost should have been the other way where it's Hangman is the one that doesn't want to give him the extra 5 minutes, but it's Swerve that has these wins over this guy. It was like, it should almost be like, you had to beat me in order to get into this match. And instead it's kind of like the opposite, like Hangman.
This is just, this is though, assuming that like they are treating these rankings as if they are, I don't know, serious, right? Like why was Paige involved in this number one contenders match? If he wasn't like, if you already had the rankings to go by.
Well, it would have been Swerve's, it was Swerve's spot to lose. So, I mean, he was the one that was essentially like putting his number one contendership on the line here against right. Hangman.
I guess so. But like seeing Daniel Garcia in a contenders match for the TNT championship without him actually being ranked doesn't tell me that they're thinking that hard about all that.
Well, blame Samoa Joe. That's who you direct your anger towards for the rankings coming back. Toni Storm presented Wet Ink. And we see these old photos of her and Deonna, and explains that Deonna was Tony helped her get into Japan and sign a contract, and said that you suckled on my teat of talent, and now you bit the tit that feeds you.
Worth it just to hear you repeat that.
I'm a professional way.
Yeah.
And she says, when you can't change the past, you kill it. And she is here getting work done on her ankle. And it reveals a updated version of the tattoo that now has a dagger going through the duck. This is amazing. If this is not being sold as a t-shirt next week, then they're totally just leaving money on the table.
Would you wear this?
I wouldn't, but there are so many people that would.
I feel
maybe
like
a copyright image. I hope she has the rights to this duck.
We should ask the tattoo artist, I suppose.
Randy Orton can tell you about tattoos and
true
making sure you have the rights to them.
I've enjoyed, I would say, almost every sort of like out of ring piece of media that they've created for Toni Storm at this point. But they've been, kind of been at varying levels of like, oh, that's kind of cute, you know, and that's sort of neat. This, like, you know, silent film going into commercial, gives me a bit of a chuckle. This was like the first piece where I actually felt like this was like seriously well done, like quality stuff here. You have a really well-written promo from Toni Storm here that gives you all the sort of backstory you need about the program, as well as, I think, her current thoughts about it. I mean, she considered Deonna somebody who was only an extra, who now thinks, you know, she's the lead. Talked about their history, you know, throughout the Japan, and how, I don't know if this is accurate or not, was Deonna actually her young girl, or at least like protege of some sort?
Did they not state that they lived together? But I think that was in New Jersey.
But was there sort of like a ranking, you know, among the two with Toni ahead? Whatever. Like, you can believe that there was. I'm sure people will be correcting us in the comment section. But it was a really well-written script, I think, full of, again, backstory, as well as like an updated sort of like idea of how she currently feels. And then it was so well shot and so well edited and so well produced. Everything just kind of looked so like slick and high level and professionally done. And the woman sacrificed her body, okay, with this tattoo to tell this story and further this story. I thought it was a very well done vignette.
So Deonna just reacts and tells her, "I'm going to break your arm, bitch." Now,
yeah,
I would say state this, like, you, I understand that this is like a really well done segment, but like, if we got matching tattoos, Way, and you decided to butcher yours, I don't know if I'd be upset at you over that. Like, we've already had our falling out, and it's like, you're, if you want to like mangle your body to have a sword going through a duck, like, that's freedom of expression right there. I'm going to break a limb of yours just because you did this.
Well, it's not just because of this. She was already upset. This was just, you know, she took this. I mean, it wasn't just the tattoo, but the entire, all the words that she said, you know, demeaning their relationship.
All right. So it was the suckling on the teat of talent that might have pushed her over the edge.
If I said that to you, I would hate to know what you would do.
I would probably have to break an arm. The Young Bucks arrive into the arena and come out. How do you feel about their new succession style theme that they debuted last week?
I like it a lot. I mean, I'm just a fan of like any sort of big effort put into an entire rebranding when it comes to, you know, people turning heel. There are going to be obviously comparisons to Roman Reigns' theme, which also sounds very succession like, but so what? Like, it works, you know. This one was a bit more on the nose. Like, even the font is like, I think
the video is very good influence that they've shot for it.
Yeah. But it's great.
So it's the Young Bucks and Top Flight. And I mean, this was a match where the Young Bucks were full on like heels here, like even to the point like they weren't going to do any of their flashy stuff. They weren't going to go like spot for spot with Top Flight. Like, they just let Top Flight be Top Flight, and they were just like the heels selling and taking all the shortcuts, and like, they're doing like major changes to every aspect of what's gotten them over for all of these years. So it's very interesting to watch that. I wouldn't look at this as a completed project. Like, we are literally watching them sort of throw this stuff against the wall on a weekly basis, and some's working and some's not. Like, I think the angle last week gave a lot of steam behind these two that was lacking beforehand, where, as you've mentioned, it felt more sort of like being the elite cutting room floor type of stuff. And Now they've got like a big match to go towards, and they did this great angle to close the show.
And let's also mention the soul patches. Okay.
The Sting soul patches.
I don't necessarily think of Sting, I suppose, when I see this, but this is like
Sting rocked that for a long time.
It's true. But this somehow looks like way worse on the Bucks, which makes it perfect for this gimmick.
Do you feel that this was a conscious effort that the Vince McMahon mustaches are gone and now the soul patches are there? They had to be spoofing Vince with those mustaches when they started this.
Possible, yeah. I'm not going to say, you know, outright no, but it's not like there's a ban on mustaches on this show. Hangman is still very much rocking his. Could just be that, hey, we can only have one mustached heel entity on the show at once.
We are not discounting mustaches, but the pencil version. I mean, that is pretty. That is pretty.
Is there a mustache ban now in AEW?
I don't know. You don't want to have an overcrowding of them, but. So the match begins. Top Flight sends them over to the floor. They tease dives, but the Bucks just run out of the way. And Nick is admonishing the announcers for they better respect them. And there's a springboard crossbody by Dante onto Matt for a two count. Darius kicks off of Dante into a tornado DDT on Matt. Nick's in to make the save. And then Nick drops Dante onto the guardrail and Nick distracts Rick Knox, allowing Matt to lift Darius, kick him low. And they hit the EVP trigger as Nick pins Darius. I thought it was fine. I wouldn't say that this was, you know, when Top Flight first came in and they had just their debut match against the Young Bucks and they just tore it down. This was certainly not that. This was much more, I think, more of the Young Bucks and character work. And like Top Flight was fine, but I wouldn't say this match, you look at it on paper, like this was going to just blow your mind. This was not that.
This was not meant to be that in any way, you know, like that would have resulted in a match where we would have wanted to cheer for the Young Bucks. And this was really all about them, again, reintroducing these heel characters and making us hate them, which I felt like they did a really good job of. I think the heel transformation at this point feels very complete for the Bucks. New look, new personas, new ring music, and I would say a pretty well adapted in-ring style here. You know, it retains a lot of the pace and perhaps quality that you would expect, but brings a lot more heelish traits. And all you have to kind of really listen to is just whether or not the crowd is reacting. And I heard every like a pretty loud crowd. I found myself very engaged throughout the match. I think wrestling in suits is ridiculous, and I thought it totally worked here. I was certainly skeptical about, you know, the tone of the backstage skits, but all these two really had to do was remind me of just like how good they are in ring, even as these sort of like modified heel versions of themselves. And I'm definitely on board now.
I think at Revolution they need to come out in like pristine new suits. And it's their blood that is going to be covered on the suits.
Love it. Love it.
Tony interviews the Young Bucks in the ring. They note they're undefeated this year and thinks that makes us number one contenders. And they point to their own graphic as the number one contenders. Shivani explains how Sting isn't here tonight after the attack last week. And Matt complains about Tony's biased commentary. And that's in breach of contract for disparaging them. They're going to levy a $1,000 fine. And then Nick uses his shoulder and knocks Tony down. And man, the crowd, they love Tony Schiavone. You do not bully this man. And then Matt apologizes. They go to help him up and they have him in position for the EVP trigger. And the crowd is like, no, not Tony. And then Darby Allin runs down into the ring with Sting's bat and tries to get it out the first time to explain the original mission statement. Something came out of his mouth. It was not those words and had to do a retake on live television. Said the original mission statement was change the world, and said how when this company started, I begged for a job. You guys weren't interested. And I had to watch all your shit friends get hired, the California crew. And at least one EVP had the sense to hire me. And it's like, okay, you're really getting down to one or the other. So Darby eliminated the 50-50 chance here. And I'm not talking about Kenny, which leads to, of course, a Cody chant here in this arena. I was like, what are you doing here?
I know. I mean, it was clearly by design.
You want to make these EVPs like positioned as like they're clueless, but I don't know if I want to be leading to a Cody chant here on my program.
It was certainly interesting hearing this. And I mean, it fits within the story. You know, you're trying to portray the Bucks as the evil EVPs while the good EVP has somehow left and is now main eventing your rival's top show of the year. Right. Like the effect of it maybe doesn't sound great, even though it fits in storyline. But it was like a heat getting line, wasn't it? Like that kind of almost.
Kenny, though, you've also like you healed Kenny in this as well. Like, saying yeah, he didn't want to hire me either, and Kenny is not on this.
Kenny EVP, caught a stray
evil yeah. EVP side, mm-hmm. So that was interesting. He said how, and he brought like up the like how they were reportedly staying here at AEW because the travel was easier, the money was really good, and now it's no longer about changing the world. He said, "Do you know who was on the first Dynamite?" Not me, but Brandon Cutler was. What the hell? And they end up making the tag title match for Revolution with Sting and Darby against the Young Bucks in Sting's final match. And when they put up the graphic, added that it would be a tornado tag match.
Okay, so just like we saw with Starks and Big Bill. And
to Sting's benefit, I think he has found his calling in these tornado tags.
Is it to his benefit? Because it demands a whole lot more for him. You know, he's not going to be able to take breaks, but he delivered, you know, in that Starks and Big Bill match.
But you get to do all the stunts. People want the stunts. Like, that is, you can't do a straight
you
tag.
Could do the stunts in a, you're right, though. Like, I suppose if it was no
they want to go all around the arena. Yeah. I mean, it's to the benefit of the match to do
you're
it
right.
This way. But there you go. The match we knew we were getting, now confirmed.
I really enjoyed this Darby promo. I mean, you know, maybe did it result in AEW's upper management looking the best? I suppose. I guess you could question that. But overall, I thought it helped the feud. I thought it certainly made me like Darby Allin more. Like, this was almost the type of promo that felt very punk-like in that it said a lot of truths and almost things that you're probably not really supposed to say, or we think you're not supposed to say, like putting
you should
over.
Have brought up here. I'm trying to be very CM Punk like, another guy who had a lot better knowledge around this place than most.
I mean, you know, he would be justified, I suppose, in saying that. But
you guys have only won two matches in your number one contenders. A real streak was by Jade Cargill, who won 45 in a row.
Oh, dude, you're on fire. That would be a lovely Darby Allin. I just thought it was like the type of like honesty or just like interesting content that made me pay attention and made me like Darby Allin more and deepen my attention into this feud.
Well, I did think the angle and using Tony Schiavone, it definitely worked for the crowd. And again, like, it's this Young Bucks turn. Like, it is certainly been with resistance from some, and I think it's tough to move to this role that they're going with.
Look at the graphic. It's the AEW World Tag Team Champions Darby Allin versus Sting versus, in bold yellow lettering, AEW EVPs Matthew and Nicholas Jackson. So are they putting that title up for grabs?
The EVP titles? No, yeah. No, those are built into the deals.
I see.
Renee interviews the Bang Bang Scissor Gang. They have new merchandise. And they're going to have a 12-man tag on Rampage on Friday, which Taz ends this segment by just stating they are all annoying people in this group.
And I suppose by this point, we should know who they're facing.
We should. I'm imagining it's the AEW crew. I'm going to imagine it's Daniels, Seidel, Menard, Parker, Hager, and someone else. That's going to be my guess.
Okay, I'll see if it's
find out. So in addition to the 12-man tag on Friday, and remember, Rampage is on at 7 Eastern, although they mentioned there's going to be a replay that night at 11:30, they will have Jeff Hardy against Sammy Guevara in a no DQ match and Queen Aminata versus Anna Jay listed for Friday, and nothing on Saturday. But next week on Dynamite, it's the Moxley and Claudio versus FTR match. And as Wei mentioned, Hook, RVD and Hangman Page against Samoa Joe, Swerve Strickland, and Brian Cage in a very random trios match.
I guess it's just a preview of you know, the Revolution main event. But yeah, throw in RVD whenever you need something interesting. But it is
something with Hook and Joe in this match, some kind of interaction. True.
Yeah, they're opposing Joe, you know, so it makes sense. It just doesn't, like, the reactions will be interesting to see how the audience reacts to Paige versus how much they will love and cheer Hook and RVD and what they do with it coming out of the match. Does Paige turn on either of the two?
We'll see. We'll find out. Willow Nightingale with Stokely Hathaway taking on Sky Blue. Taz and Stokely argued about the colors of their shirts, and Taz claiming orange is his, and he's wearing Texas orange, and they believe that Stokely's shirt was more butternut squash.
Thanks.
Willow got a really good reaction coming out here, and she hit this pounce. And dude, Sky Blue flew into the sky with this pounce. She went all across the ring and to the floor. This looked incredible. I think this was during the break. Stokely gave out his one password, mentioning his TD Bank account, which is the same password Tony uses for his AOL Instant Messenger.
Okay, did you catch it? Did you write it down?
I didn't write it down, but he did disclose it. Willow hits a bunch of clotheslines, knocks her off the apron. Crowd continues to be behind Willow. And then Blue hits a powerbomb out of the corner, gets a two count, and then goes for Code Blue. And Stokely, sensing that Willow's in trouble, distracts Aubrey. And it does not take much to distract the referees in this company. And so Aubrey is dealing with Stokely. Willow gets out of the pinning predicament and hits the Babe with the powerbomb and beats Sky Blue with Stokely's assistance.
Good match, I felt.
I thought they worked really well together. Yeah.
I feel like this current storyline with Stokely and Willow and Chris Statlander, like, could use some context on commentary, in my opinion. It's fine for like storylines to like play out on Rampage and Collision, but I think they should also remember that less than half the audience watches those shows that are watching Dynamite. And I just don't think more video packages or just maybe more of a holding of the hand from your announcers before presenting like another chapter in the story. I don't think it ever hurts.
Our final match, it was the Texas Death Match between Orange Cassidy and Matt Taven. And they fight into the stands. We got a table set up and Taven comes off the stage with an elbow. Sometimes the table doesn't break. Sometimes the table does break. Very rare that the table bends. Was this table made out of like rubber? This thing was like, it was like a U shape after he hit this elbow. So then Taven decides to just suplex Orange through the table. And all of a sudden Cassidy is just bleeding like right across his hairline. And man, this was a fair amount of blood.
Yeah, this was a Texas death match level blade job, I would say.
Yes. Taven brings out another table and he balances it against the announcer's desk and he dives over the top, missing Cassidy and crashing through this table. And now the crowd was going nuts. Taven is bleeding as well. Cassidy is just in need of a transfusion. He pulls out a box of chocolates from Chuck Taylor, but it's not chocolates. It's tacks. This was the alternate ending in Forrest Gump. Taven then sends Orange Cassidy off the turnbuckle, lands on the tacks. So Taven leaps off the top with this huge splash, comes up empty, and he lands on the tacks. Cassidy falls with a satellite DDT. Crowd's going nuts here. Cassidy brings out a chain, but then he is attacked by Mike Bennett, who fills the ring with chairs. And Trent walks down with a bunch of roses, and there is a pipe within those roses. Blasts it into this chair that Bennett is holding, and then Taven attacks Trent with a chair, drills him off the turnbuckle into the chair, and that opens things up for Cassidy to hit the Orange Punch and a beach break on the sea of chairs, wraps a chain, Orange Punch, and then Roderick Strong comes in and takes out Trent with a knee, but we've got Taven still down as they're making the 10 count, and Cassidy wins by knockout as the count makes it to 10. Cassidy.
So I mean, a lot of people were questioning why a Texas death match suddenly, you know, with Matt Taven and Orange Cassidy.
You're in Texas.
That really is the only justification. And looking at the result, it's perfectly fine. Like they wanted
there to. To be fair, the story is that Orange Cassidy is not going to turn down a challenge, and the Undisputed Kingdom knows that, and they're pushing this guy so that he's going to be he's going to be handicapped for Roderick Strong in a couple of weeks. So they're putting him through all these paces every week. Yes. And they went, like, there was a perfectly legitimate story to this beyond just doing a crazy match for the sake of it.
Right. I don't think the arguments were in bad faith. I think, especially coming off of Swerve and Page, you have people that are able to recognize the Texas Deathmatch as a culminating, you know, like gimmick.
That's
you
fair.
Have
the bar is very high now for that. This has become a calling card match for AEW.
Exactly.
That's fair. To that end, though, for a TV match, like I thought this was like,
well, you know, it's going to be great. Like they have a lot to live up to. And I thought they delivered like a high level of spectacle and violence and that lived up to, you know, the Texas Deathmatch billing within AEW. I mean, Matt Taven worked his fucking ass off in this.
This was his biggest opportunity since coming into AEW to have a singles match on Dynamite, get enough time here. They got the overrun on top of it. Like I thought this was definitely my match of the show.
Oh, yes, without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. So, that's how things ended. They did it's pretty much just a guarantee now. They're going to do 5-minute overruns every week for Dynamite. Like, it's not a out of the ordinary type of thing. It's just kind of built in for those extra 5 minutes. And that was Dynamite. I would say, like, overall as a show, definitely a step down from last week, which was an electric show. But I think this one was more... less so on the match quality, but they did do a number of angles that I think were beneficial to the pay-per-view. I thought that, Copeland and Garcia was a very good match, but the angle was very important afterwards. The Bucks and Top Flight, it was more so the angle afterwards, setting up the tornado match for the pay-per-view. Joe, Swerve, and Hangman really intensifying that. Like, you're... for all the talk that AEW, at times these pay-per-views come up, and all of a sudden it's like, we've got to get all these matches announced. Like, they have given a lot of breathing room to have the build, announce these well in advance. And this is shaping up to be, I would say, one of the stronger shows from a company that typically has very strong pay-per-views. Like, this one has the emotional peak of Sting's farewell. And man, you've got Ospreay and Takeshita that's going to be just thrown into the middle of this. Mm-hmm. Danielson and Kingston is on this card. We still don't have the Moxley match. You have this three-way for the AEW title. Storm and Deonna Purrazzo has been building very, very effectively. Yeah. So I think that this seems to be one of, I think, the better built pay-per-views that AEW has also put together. We'll see.
Agreed.
How the final 3 weeks go.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the storytelling has been pretty cohesive thus far, especially like for the main event. You know, being able to tell the story for a three-way, I don't think is the easiest thing, especially when you have, at this point, such a celebrated rivalry in Page and Swerve. But Joe has never at all felt sort of forgotten about. And so I would say up and down, like, this has been like every program feels like it's being long built, maybe with the exception of like, you know, Takeshita and Ospreay. But I mean, that's just a hot match that kind of speaks for itself anyway. And it's a guy's sort of official debut in AEW. So
that one doesn't need anything what we got tonight. It's the showcase of Will Ospreay in AEW. And we're giving him a world class opponent to go out there and be Will Ospreay and have the best match you can possibly have on your first night in.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
All right. There you have it. We are going to open it up. If you want to throw in any super chats, you are welcome to do so. And we have a bunch of feedback here from the forum.
Let's go to forum.postwrestling.com.
We'll start with Andrew from Cape Breton. Matt Taven has had a rough go of things in the past few years with his much maligned ROH title run being the major knock. I think that he made the most out of his opportunity tonight, and maybe he could be taken seriously down the road. I hope Mike Bennett gets something like that too, as the stench from his WWE run is hard to get rid of. I also didn't know how to feel about the DQ tonight, as normally in WWE they're annoying as they always come at the end of a long match. The fact that AEW rarely does DQs though did help with that finish, as well as all the heat for it being on the patriarchy. I'm just not sure where they're going with Copeland now, as normally the concerto is a heavy angle. And lastly, I wasn't a fan of Darby making the Cody Rhodes reference. It reminded me of WCW and when they would talk about all the great guys that they had who left. Maybe it could be justified as Darby had a history with Cody, but it's something you want to avoid. Good show in general though.
It was a controversial line, without a doubt. It would have been, Cody is the biggest star in WWE right now. And you know, rather than this just simply being Darby's truth, it was, in effect, something that made the biggest star of your rival company feel like that much of a, like a real star who left and for greener pastures. But I mean, I think it was just Darby speaking to the truth of his own history within the company and, you know, furthering the heel kind of like reaction to the Bucks. I don't think it hurts like AEW.
I think it's the end of the company.
This is the line that takes them
I think
down.
That was it. Yeah, that was okay. It. They had a good run.
All right, let's go to Jordan from the Bronx, who says, Dynamite was a fun show and the Revolution card is filling out nicely. Ospreay and Takeshita will be great, and I'm looking forward to seeing how both guys will be booked after the match. Takeshita has had one too many hot and cold spells. Well, so this brings up an interesting question. How do you book the finish of that match, Takeshita Ospreay?
It's an interesting one because like Takeshita is like normal circumstances. I would state like Ospreay's coming in, he should win his first match. But you've put so much into Takeshita as this like unbeatable force that has beaten Omega twice, beat Jericho. I don't see it as a problem. I see it as like, here's a match where you have compelling arguments about who goes over. Like I would say conventional wisdom is you want Ospreay to win. I think this match is just going to be so extraordinary that it's almost going to be, I won't say irrelevant who wins, but it's like the story is going to be the quality of the match. And if Don Callis gets involved too, as well, like that could set something up where maybe we're going to fast track Ospreay to get to the babyface side and not even play this out all that long, or at least have a tease of that.
Considering I think how much like value Will Ospreay holds for like the future of this company, I think he has to win in his first match back, but Takeshita and the Callis family can get their heat back by, you know, beating the shit out of him afterwards and building to a bigger angle. So,
and you still have the heat on Takeshita. Like he put Jericho out with the walls and,
Yeah.
And Jericho, like does he have some kind of role on this show or in this angle? Like this is his storyline.
He also has a question here. Is there a reason why AEW doesn't announce injuries? I recently watched an interview on their YouTube channel featuring Queen Anna Manata, and she talked about her having a knee injury, but on TV, she seemingly disappeared. I find myself asking about guys whereabouts like Miro, Wheeler, Yuta, Pac. Since AEW is leaning into a sports presentation, maybe including an injury report, whether legit or kayfabe, could be a nice inclusion.
I mean, I think it's of no negative to do that type of thing because, like, in AEW, you did get a lot of questions about, like, where these people have disappeared for so long and you don't get updates on them. I don't see why it hurts, but obviously it's something they don't go out of their way to do. WWE, I mean, they'll disclose it when there's like for Shotzi, it's unavoidable, but I mean, they'll have injuries too that they don't necessarily bring up. I just think it's like there's also just for the sake of storytelling as well, someone is hurt and someone's coming back from something, it can be woven into a story and your audience is at least aware of what someone is going through,
right? But I don't think it's necessary to announce everybody who's currently on the disabled list, you know, which maybe a segment like this would suggest. I feel like in wrestling, like you, they already have trouble, especially in AEW, putting a certain amount of people in focus. And I think they've done a good job of that, especially during this pay-per-view run, to the point where I don't know how relevant it is to give you an injury update on somebody who's not going to be featured in the storyline. If they're about to come back, you know, like let's say, like, I don't know if it's a Serena Deeb and you're just kind of counting the days before she makes her return, then I think it's important and necessary. You're trying to get people to think about that person. But in some cases, you don't know when, you know, a Dante Martin might come back from an injury. I mean, in Dante Martin's case, especially, that they really could have used like a bit more of a buildup to his return. But sometimes, you know, they just have nothing for them. So I'm sure there's a good way of maybe doing it. But I don't know about maybe every injury.
Muggin writes, the slow burn double turn between Hangman and Swerve took another step forward. It's also rare for AEW to do a DQ finish, but it made sense for Copeland and Garcia to get ruined by that turtleneck SOB and his brood. Was it a write-off for Adam? Ospreay drawing Takeshita for his first match at Revolution could be a vehicle to turn Will babyface. I think he's outgrowing Don Callis and company. Orange Cassidy hasn't even arrived in the company yet. He's outgrown them. Cassidy and Taven didn't need to be a Texas death match because the sanctity of it needs to be protected for more heated rivalries. The not so young bucks are leaning into the type A executives with such douchey zeal.
Hmm. I don't see it as a write-off for Copeland. I mean, you know, for one thing, he walked out of the arena reportedly, and I just don't see him missing Revolution, you know?
Oh, it could be a three-way. Like, they certainly have laid the groundwork mm-hmm. that it could be that.
And he says, Moxley Dax is the match of the week. Joe has a thing that the kids call aura in spades. Are kids saying that? Really? Aura in spades. Some have some gripes with the direction of the Hangman character, which for the most part has nailed the zeitgeist. While I love the angle last week and wearing the blood-tinted outfits, these Young Bucks characters have just fallen flat and haven't been nearly as clever as they seem to think they are. Stands out when you're seeing the wrestler in a management position deal done better at the same time. Obviously referring to The Rock. Using Darby's origin story to gain heat is clever, but it's interesting to see Cornette's all-friends wrestling shtick become babyface material in AEW canon. The death match was not my cup of tea without the heated feud to go with it. Overall, I thought the show lacked a little substance and was a come down from last week's, my favorite episode of wrestling TV in 2024. Is that line from Darby going to be the most controversial thing to come out of the show?
The Cody line?
The Cody lines and just, I guess, the general sort of all friends wrestling.
I mean, it's defined controversial. I mean, people will weigh in on it.
Does it reflect poorly on the company to let that line go?
I wouldn't be encouraging to have like a big audience reaction for the top star in the other company that left your company. I just don't think like there's no value of that to you and your company. I could have done just without and I'm not talking about Kenny. Like, I mean, you could have at least just kept it open-ended at that point. You're probably not getting a Cody chant at that juncture, at least a more reserved one. But I also think like that in a vacuum, I don't think it's some horrible thing either. It is what it is. And it was probably like the very true, like, this is what you're going to have like in a company where you're not like writing out promos for people and you give them a mic and stuff like that's going to happen. And sometimes it's going to result in reactions that are not as favorable for you, or it's going to shift perception of a character or even of the story that you're trying to tell. To me, it was just,
so
not what I would be aiming for, but I don't think this is some grand tragedy either.
Yeah, like, I mean, are we getting to the territory of making sure that you don't mention Cody at all then? You know, if you're I don't know, somebody cutting promos in AEW. Like, this was just Darby telling the truth of his own history.
How many times is Cody coming up in promos, though, since he left?
Like, probably a couple times, at least. Probably several times.
He's been mentioned here and there. I don't think you insult your audience by pretending the guy didn't exist, but I'm also not going out of my way to
but this is the gimmick though. Like the feud is Darby Allin versus two people he thinks are undeserving of their EVP status or who he feels are corrupt, you know, and sort of people who aren't in line with the original intent of what this company stood for.
Well, then Cody is not the babyface that's coming to back up Darby Allin and be the savior of AEW. He's not the EVP. He's not coming back to be the EVP to get this company back on track.
Yeah. And but does everything have to lead to an angle, like a match, for instance?
I think that you want to have some direction for this. I mean, you kind of want to have that figure that offsets this. And this kind of puts like Tony Khan in like this story by
puts Kenny in an awkward position for sure.
It certainly did in this promo, but maybe that line will just be forgotten. Cody from Maine. I'll be taking the trip down to Greensboro next month. I was sold on the Sting retirement alone, but with what has been announced for the card so far, I don't need another match to be happy. This show should be incredible, and I'm sure we'll get at least four more matches anyway. Very happy to have seen Taven get a chance to shine. It's a shame ROH tried to push him a bit too hard too soon. It soured people on a really solid performer. Hopefully tonight changed some opinions. Although my lone negative with the match was the stipulation. It could have just been a hardcore match or no DQ. You need to save the Texas death stipulation for what we've seen it used for previously. I mean, fair enough. Like, there's enough of, like, I didn't give it too much care in terms of that, like this sanctity of the Texas death match. And I'm not even saying that like facetiously, like they have built this up. Like, that is a big stipulation. Mm-hmm. I think just the location of it made this an easy sell for people. And it's obviously a type of stipulation now that AEW can sell people on, that it means a big deal. But they could have gone another route. They could have done the same kind of putting Orange Cassidy through the paces in a violent match that doesn't have to be this match that we've kind of turned into One of our marquee attractions that we've developed.
Yeah, they could have gone with, like, you know, certainly the match itself was a lot more Valentine's themed than Texas themed, you know, like they could have branded it something, you know, Valentine's.
My Bloody Valentine.
Perfect. Can we go into a time machine and you can whisper that to Tony Khan? Maybe, you know, there wouldn't be this outcry. I do think there's something to be said about, like, protecting your, like, valuable gimmicks. You know, look at what WWE's been able to do with, I don't know, Hell in a Cell and whatever, War Games or Money in the Bank. You know, like, Texas Deathmatch with a match like Swerve versus Page was, like, you're ascending that to a level where it should be regarded as a pay-per-view quality type of thing. But again, this is not going to hurt or kill the company.
It's not like they bastardized the great Texas Deathmatch. Like, this was still a really good match. It was violent. You got a lot of blood in this match.
Yes.
But I understand the pushback. You're coming off, like, one of, if not the greatest Texas Deathmatches that this industry has seen from last November. So it's going to be very hard to up the bar from that. That's only going to grow in people's memory on top of it.
All right, lastly, let's go to Brian from New Jersey, who says, a fun episode with a lot of good storytelling, especially in the first hour, and good wrestling, especially in the first hour, and good storytelling and pay-per-view built throughout. I love Samoa Joe continuing to run with the ball given to him. I could listen to him talk for even longer. Hangman's heelish character since the last match with Swerve is an interesting twist, and coincidentally, kind of mirrors Roxanne Perez's current character in NXT. Orange Cassidy and Matt Taven really escalated quickly, but all parties delivered. Short but savage build for Storm versus Perrazzo. I'm fully behind the evil EVP act of the Bucks. It gives good fuel for faces like Darby and Kingston, and the always changing facial hair is fun. Quick aside, what did you catch the news from Marvel Studios today? The new Fantastic Four have been cast, and Richie from The Bear has been cast as The Thing.
Yeah, Wade, did you have any strong reaction to the casting choices for the Fantastic Four? This is definitely more your lane.
Yeah. So I feel like Pedro Pascal has, you know, been rumored and heavily, almost like I would say confirmed, you know, for several weeks now. And I really like it. He's, you know, not somebody you would think first for the role, but the man's such an incredibly strong actor that I have no doubt he'll bring a really, really interesting version of Reed Richards to screen. I'm not really as familiar with the rest of the cast outside of the actor who plays Richie on The Bear, who I think is a perfect choice for Ben Grimm and The Thing. I mean, just the voice alone I think is perfect for it, and I think he's just got that, like, he's always pissed off anyway, you know, and he's always down on his luck, as you see on The Bear, and that's exactly, I think, you know, how I picture Ben Grimm. You have any thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I think Pedro Pascal is great. I'm not, like, super up on the Fantastic Four, so I can't really comment on, like, how well these casting choices are. But yeah, it's interesting.
Did you watch the Deadpool trailer?
No, I did not.
Oh, you got to watch the Deadpool trailer. That's good. It's going to be a lot of fun.
When does that come out?
July.
Oh, okay. July. Yeah. This is until July 25. So they're really big leg up.
Well, even that is like they're pretty ambitious with that date because they're just announcing casting now. Clearly not in production yet. I don't even know how far along in the pre-production process they are. And they're going to have to rush this. Like, it feels like a year is not a long time to put, like, an entire movie with all the special effects and everything together.
This is right after the success of Iron Man, when they immediately wanted to develop Iron Man 2, and Jon Favreau was just thrown into the toughest production schedule of producing that movie, as I am into now. I'm up to Iron Man 3, actually, in the production of it.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. I'm almost done with the book. Yes.
Give me a report. Give me a 50 page.
I'll write an essay.
Yeah.
Please. MCU, a thought-provoking exercise by John Pollock. And this has been a thought-provoking edition of Rewind to Dynamite. So we want to thank everyone for joining us. And the questions can keep rolling in up at forum.postwrestling.com. Get them in by Thursday morning or memo.fm/postwrestling. That show will be up Thursday early evening at postwrestlingcafe.com. So $6 gets you in the door for access to all of our bonus shows, including Rewind to SmackDown, which is the next time we'll be talking with you on Friday night, after a pretty big SmackDown from Salt Lake City, Utah, with The Rock, with Dwayne Johnson, Logan Paul, the qualifying matches, and their last live SmackDown before Elimination Chamber. Yeah, we have to discuss what are you going to do on Elimination Chamber with a 5 a.m. start time?
Jeez.
I'm not getting up at 5 a.m. to watch that, but so we will do a show at some point that day.
Is that a Saturday?
It's a Saturday.
So that means like a few hours after SmackDown is the Chamber.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I didn't even think of like
the 7 hours after SmackDown, you're getting the Chamber.
It's like right around the same time, too, as the Okada's last match.
Wow. Okay. So, I wonder if it's even worth doing Rewind of SmackDown for that particular day.
I think no.
Yeah.
I think we should just do Elimination Chamber.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my guess. This is what you get, everyone. This is the bonus content, okay, as we're doing our schedule off the top of our heads. We'll have the update for you when we chat with you next. But I'm leaning towards that as well, as you say that out loud, because, okay. I mean, SmackDown's going to be dated real, real quickly by the pay-per-view. All right. Thanks for everyone for joining us. Have a good evening. Have a good morning. Have a good life.